20 years ago, Microsoft had everything, the platform, the developers, total dominance. But they threw it all away, and now Valve is building what Xbox didn't. Before Xbox existed, before consoles even entered Microsoft's strategic thinking, the company was already dominating PC gaming. Back then, it laid the foundation for the world that is relatively familiar to us now, a world where PC gaming is synonymous with Windows. And it was all driven by DirectX. Developers built their engines on DirectX and Microsoft controlled the entire pipeline. But it did take some time to get there. Before DirectX, Windows was being completely ignored by game developers who preferred MS-DOS because they could code much closer to the metal. DOS allowed direct access to hardware, Windows didn't. So Microsoft started DirectX as a way to attract not just developers of DOS PC games, but also developers of console games. They codenamed this effort the Manhattan Project, apparently because it reflected the team's desire, as an American company, to displace the dominant Japanese companies within the video game market. Questionable naming aside, Microsoft developers found that game developers were reluctant to move to Windows 95 because the operating system restricted access to low-level hardware features that DOS allowed, while also failing to provide the standardized tools that developers needed. But this was a double-edged sword. Developers had to write code for every individual graphics card and sound card, so you'd see entries for Creative, Sound Blaster, or Ad-Libbed in game menus, and there was no guarantee that a game would work on hardware outside those popular brands. With DirectX, then, Microsoft sought to standardize the catalog of commands and features available to game developers. In this way, developers could write games to be compatible with DirectX itself, rather than specific hardware. And they partnered with not just game developers, but also hardware makers to standardize to DirectX. This helped guarantee compatibility between any game and hardware component while still being relatively close to the metal. Developers were skeptical, so Microsoft approached id Software to port Doom and Doom 2, and wouldn't you know it, Gabe Newell himself led the ports of these two watershed titles to Windows 95 using DirectX. Subsequently, Bill Gates promoted these games on Windows heavily in ads, and it worked. This was the first domino, and by the late 90s, Windows was the only platform that mattered when it came to PC gaming. Developers stopped coding for DOS, and the hardware companies aligned around DirectX. Microsoft had successfully transformed Windows into gaming's native home. Microsoft did it. They owned PC gaming, the platform layer, the developer relationships, and the technical standards. Everyone else was building on top of Microsoft's foundation. DirectX's dominance gave Microsoft confidence. If they could reshape the entire PC gaming landscape, why couldn't they do the same on consoles? The console market in the late 90s was ripe for disruption. Nintendo and PlayStation were entrenched, but online gaming was about to explode, and Microsoft had the infrastructure expertise to own that space in a way that console makers traditionally didn't. The timing aligned perfectly with Sega's struggles. Microsoft and Sega had partnered as early as 1998, with Sega allowing developers to target Windows CE on the upcoming Dreamcast. Theoretically, this was a chance to take advantage of the large library of games that were made for DirectX because developers could easily port to Windows CE instead of Sega's low-level APIs for the Dreamcast, but in practice, developers chose to go for the dedicated APIs more often than not. Still though, it wasn't long before Sega's hardware aspirations died. Dreamcast was discontinued on March 31st, 2001. That exit left a vacuum, and Microsoft saw it as an opening. They prepared a launch of their own with plans to make Dreamcast games playable on their new console, but even that fell through. Still though, it was almost like Microsoft inherited Sega's place in the hardware market. They had the confidence from DirectX dominance, they had the opportunity from Sega's exit, and they had the technical chops to build something genuinely different. They were about to enter the console wars with an advantage that no other newcomer ever had, deep infrastructure expertise from PC gaming. When Xbox launched in November 2001, it was a statement. Microsoft showed up with raw horsepower, a hard drive, built-in Ethernet, and, most importantly, Halo. Halo defined the Xbox, and it showed that Microsoft understood what gamers wanted. GameCube and especially PlayStation 2 were, of course, formidable with their own visions and incredible libraries, but Xbox carved out its own identity. Even though it wasn't dominating, it was competing credibly on a stage dominated by PlayStation's 2 library juggernaut. But the crucial thing is what happened alongside the Xbox success. Microsoft didn't treat the console as a reason to abandon PC gaming, they treated it as an addition to their gaming portfolio. DirectX kept evolving, PC gaming thrived as developers built on Microsoft's platform. The ecosystem that had made Microsoft powerful in the first place continued to attract world-class games and world-class game developers. This wasn't a zero-sum strategy where they picked console or picked PC. Microsoft was playing both sides, maintaining their PC gaming foundation while building a credible console presence. For the first time, Microsoft had something genuinely rare, real presence in both PC gaming and console gaming. They owned the platform layer on PC, and they had a major player in consoles. It looked like they'd cracked the code, but this dual presence did require constant attention, constant resources, and constant commitment to both markets. And as the mid-2000s approached, that commitment would start to fracture. The Xbox 360 launched in 2005 and became a phenomenon. It dominated the early 2000s console wars, particularly in the US and UK markets. It was peak Xbox, commercially successful, culturally relevant, and it became the center of Microsoft's gaming universe. But as the 360 consumed more and more of Microsoft's resources and attention, PC gaming got quieter. Microsoft had to choose where to invest, and the choice became clear. Console was the future for Microsoft. Nonetheless, Microsoft saw a chance to make a big play in PC gaming. What if they could have their cake and eat it too? What if they could get Xbox 360 style subscription revenue, but in the PC gaming market? Enter Games for Windows Live. On the surface, it looked promising. Cross-platform play between Windows and Xbox 360, unified achievements and friends lists, but it was half-hearted from day one. PC gamers had to pay $50 a year for gold membership just to play online, even though other PC games offered online play for free. By 2008, Microsoft realized the strategy wasn't working and made it free, removing that subscription requirement, but it was too late, brand damage was done, and although Microsoft didn't want to make it worse, they weren't willing to invest to make it better. Crucially, Valve was just beginning to take over PC gaming during this time. Steam was providing features that PC gamers actually wanted and creating an ecosystem that felt like it was made for PC gamers rather than marketed at them. By the time Games for Windows Live launched in 2007, Steam was already where PC gamers wanted to play and their libraries were growing faster than ever. But Microsoft couldn't see this at the time. They were printing money with Xbox Live subscriptions and they thought that they could get away with that on PC too. PC gamers saw through it immediately because they knew what they wanted. They didn't want walled gardens, they wanted openness, choice, and community that formed organically rather than through subscription gates. Microsoft overplayed their hand, and Valve grabbed the foothold it needed to dominate the market. While Microsoft was focused on the 360, Valve was systematically building something that would outlast a 5 or even 10 year console generation cycle. By 2008, Steam had over 1,000 games in its library, and the Steam community platform with friends lists, stat tracking, groups, and voice chat had made it the center of PC gaming culture. By 2009, Steam had 25 million active users and had achieved over 100% year-over-year growth in unit sales for the fifth straight year. More importantly, in May 2008, Valve released the Steamworks SDK, allowing any developer to integrate Steam without Valve's direct involvement. This was the moment that the market tipped. Developers flocked to Steam and third-party adoption exploded. Microsoft would have more PC comeback attempts, but they all missed the fundamental point. They were building against what PC gamers actually wanted. Games for Windows Live required payment for online play, a concept that PC gamers rejected. And although Microsoft would bring day and date ports to PC, they first sold these exclusively on their Microsoft Store, not Steam. From 2016 to 2019, most Microsoft Studios games were distributed exclusively through the Microsoft Store, hidden behind a complicated interface and a QA process so lengthy and harsh compared to Steam that developers actively avoided updating their games there. While Cuphead sold a million copies in 2 weeks, it had only 18 user reviews on the Microsoft Store compared to 14,500 on Steam, which served as a reminder that PC gamers simply wouldn't show up for Microsoft storefront no matter how good the game was, because although day and date releases were nice, they meant nothing when Steam already had become the fabric of PC gaming. Steam was where your friends were, it's where your libraries were stored, and importantly, it's where the sales happened. Each of Microsoft's attempts were misguided, and they were trying to port console business models to a platform that had already rejected them. Meanwhile, Steam pioneered limited time sales with up to 90% discounts, something that was impossible on consoles, where the console manufacturers risked angering physical retailers who simply couldn't compete. Steam's infrastructure, library, renown, and pricing meant that no other company could take it on, and it became synonymous with PC gaming. Microsoft kept trying to come home to a community that had already moved on. Over time, Microsoft met PC gamers where they were, Xbox games came to PC, even Steam, day and date, and they had a subscription service that, up until exorbitant price hikes, gamers did consider to be well worth the cost. Game Pass. Game Pass, at least native PC play, was locked to the Xbox Store on PC and not available on Steam, but that was considered fine because the games themselves were still available on Steam. But then Microsoft completed the biggest acquisition ever in gaming when they acquired Activision Blizzard King. While it was an impressive get with marquee titles like Call of Duty, Candy Crush, and World of Warcraft, it suddenly put Xbox under a lot of pressure to make the purchase look like a good decision. In other words, they had to make that money back. And so they pivoted again, first bringing a few games to PlayStation and then finally admitting that the days of Xbox exclusives are essentially over. This forced Microsoft into a radical rebrand because they had to admit that Xbox as a brand couldn't be tied to a single piece of hardware. That is where This Is an Xbox campaign comes in. It's supposed to explain the new vision. Instead, it appears to reveal how lost Microsoft has become. Microsoft's campaign is supposed to be reassuring. It's supposed to explain what Xbox is to a confused audience. Instead, it perfectly encapsulates the problem. Microsoft seemingly no longer knows what Xbox is. The campaign's central claim is that any device, your laptop, your smartphone, your smart TV, even a VR headset, is an Xbox when it can access games via Game Pass or Xbox Cloud Gaming. Microsoft partnered with Crocs, Porsche, and other brands to literally label random objects as "This is an Xbox." The campaign was born out of necessity, but it openly acknowledged that an Xbox console itself is just not relevant anymore. In fact, the rumored next Xbox console is being described as essentially a PC, including with it inherent support for the biggest platform for PC gaming, Steam. By abandoning hardware identity, Microsoft left a void in the market. There are people who want dedicated gaming hardware with a clear purpose and vision. They don't want a service subscription. They don't want to be told that you don't need a device. Gamers want a device that was actually built for gaming by people who understand what gamers value. And here's the kicker. Valve is once again doing what Xbox refused to do. They are now offering what Xbox used to offer. First-party, purpose-built gaming hardware with a clear identity. Microsoft spent nearly two decades building that same identity. They pioneered it with the original Xbox, and they perfected it with the 360. They made a name in console gaming by being the company that understood hardware and infrastructure. There was a time that they understood what gamers wanted from a device, and then they walked away from it. They walked away from it every time they miscalculated what gamers wanted and then walked it back. First, they chased subscription revenue on PC, then they delayed ports to PC, and then to Steam, and by the time they learned all of the lessons that they were meant to learn, they made a hefty investment that forced them to blur the lines until Xbox as a brand became invisible. Microsoft had every advantage, they had resources Valve could only dream of, but they ended up on a pursuit for profit that eclipsed any vision that they could ever have. The 360 knew what it was. Xbox can now be a refrigerator. Valve, meanwhile, stayed focused on the long game. When they first launched Steam machines in 2015 and it failed, they didn't give up. They came back with the Steam Deck, refined the vision, and are now launching a new Steam machine. That is the difference between pursuit of profit and vision. That's a company that knows what it believes in versus a company that chases whatever makes money next quarter. So now Valve, whose founder helped bring DirectX to life, is the one offering what Xbox abandoned. The company that was built on PC gaming is now building the hardware that console makers forgot to build. But let's be honest about the scale. The Steam Machine may not become a blockbuster. The Steam Deck sold 5 million units, respectable for a handheld, but nowhere near console numbers. The Steam Machine could sell even less. It doesn't have the retail presence that consoles do. It doesn't have Microsoft's supply chain. There are real reasons that this might not become a major seller. Steam Machine may not match console sales numbers, but success looks different to Valve than it does to Microsoft. Valve isn't chasing quarterly profits or trying to compete on raw sales numbers. They're playing a different game entirely, building a long-term ecosystem where Steam Machine becomes just one more piece of a larger vision. Every Steam Machine sold is a player entrenched deeper in the Steam ecosystem, a consumer that's almost soft-locked into Valve's platform for years to come. Remarkably, with the Steam Machine, Valve isn't forgetting its roots. Steam Machine runs on SteamOS, a Linux-based operating system that represents a philosophical stance: openness, transparency, and player choice. And you do have to give credit to Microsoft because their latest marketing is all about openness too. Xbox games can be played on PlayStation, on PC, everywhere. So what if Microsoft isn't confused at all? What if they actually have a vision, just not the one we're used to seeing? Phil Spencer has been remarkably consistent about one thing. He says, quote, "There are 3 billion people who play video games on the planet, and I get up every morning thinking about how Xbox can be more relevant to those 3 billion players. That's through making sure we're leading in how our games and platform features are available in as many places as possible, whether that's cloud, PC, or console." Microsoft's strategy is no longer about dominating one piece of hardware, it's about ubiquity, being everywhere, accessible to everyone on whatever device they prefer. Clearly, this isn't accidental messaging. Spencer has been explicit. He also said, "We want to meet players where they are, and the end result has to be better games that more people can play." That is a pretty coherent vision. They're saying out loud that they're not trying to win the console wars because they believe the console wars don't matter anymore. Microsoft looked at the market and decided, why fight for the 20% of gamers on your specific hardware when you could serve 100% of gamers everywhere? Even outside of gaming, Microsoft has shown that they are more open than they used to be, embracing open source software, creating Windows subsystem for Linux, and putting their apps on Android and iOS. So why is the "This is an Xbox" campaign so confusing? Well, because of where Microsoft comes from. Valve can say Steam is everywhere, and it feels natural, almost inevitable. Valve built Steam as an open PC platform, so of course they want it to be available everywhere, and they don't mind that they have to compete with other storefronts. Microsoft is saying the same thing, but from the opposite direction. They're coming from a closed console ecosystem and trying to convince people that now, suddenly, they're open, and they don't mind competing with other storefronts too. That's a harder sell, and the messaging warrants real criticism because it contradicts everything Microsoft used to stand for. Valve has built goodwill with PC gamers over two decades. Players trust Valve's vision of openness. Microsoft's history is far more spotty. They spent years extracting subscription fees, locking things down, and building walled gardens. Now they're asking those same players to believe that they've changed, and maybe they have, genuinely. Microsoft does need their games on every platform to survive in a world where hardware dominance is just no longer possible for them. But the execution undercuts the message. Raising Game Pass Ultimate 50% while simultaneously telling players Xbox is everywhere and accessible feels less open and more like extracting maximum value from players already fatigued by subscriptions. Consumers aren't wrong to feel burned, the trust gap is real, and Microsoft earned it.